This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Thrashing, crushing, humiliating, brutal. The news of Germany's stinging defeat of Brazil in the World Cup semifinals yesterday pulled no punches. One specially designed 2014 World Cup bazooka ball after another sailed past Brazil's goalie in the first 29 minutes of the game. We're going to turn to a much happier outcome, a world away in the Pakistani city responsible for producing nearly half of the world's soccer balls. Sialkot, Pakistan is home to nearly 100 firms that produce soccer balls. Until recently, many using methods that increased waste and decreased profits. Joe Pinsker wrote in The Atlantic about why Sialkot's football industry has become a test case for overcoming obstacles in developing world centers for manufacturing. Joe, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So first of all, why are so many soccer balls made in Pakistan?
Well, the origins of all this actually date back to about 120 years ago or so, when India was still a British colony. And the British there were playing a lot of soccer. The balls that they used came shipped back from England. And at one point, a British sergeant had punctured a ball, details unknown, and he wanted that ball repaired. So he approached a local saddle maker. He happened to be in Sialkot. And the saddle maker repaired it with flying colors, and so he ordered a new batch, and everything sort of took off from there. Within about 100 years, the city had started to supply balls to the World Cup.
So this year, we read the CBS headline declaring the Adidas bazooka ball to be the most high-tech yet. There were also similar descriptions for Jabulani 4 years ago. So are these balls really so exceptional or different than others produced in Sialkot?
Well, actually, the majority of the balls that are produced there are not the World Cup balls. They produce balls of a buckyball design, which is a bunch of pentagons and hexagons cut out from an artificial leather material. It's sort of what we conventionally think of when we hear the word soccer ball. So there is a bit of an arms race every year when it comes to the World Cup and bandying about how those balls are the very best. But the vast majority of the ones produced in Sialkot are actually these very traditional-looking balls, and those are the ones that account for the majority of the balls out there in the world.
And many of them actually stitched by hand, at least until recently.
Yeah, there is a handful of factories in that area that do that.
You'd think that given the size of the industry there, Sialkot would be a leader in making balls efficiently. But you found a study of the city's manufacturers that came out quite differently.
Right. So the factories there start with a big sheet of fake leather material that they then cut out all the shapes from. And there's a predetermined arrangement of how they cut out the pentagons for the soccer balls from those sheets. And there was a Columbia professor who discovered that there actually might be a more efficient way to lay out the pentagons and arrange them on that sheet so that there was less waste created. This was a technology that hadn't really taken at all in that area, even though it turns out this pentagon arrangement actually appears on the Wikipedia page for pentagon. So it's actually a pretty well-known arrangement to mathematicians that just hadn't hit this industry yet. So the way the study was set up was originally to see how quickly a technology would spread. So the researchers introduced this technology to a couple of manufacturers and tried to observe how quickly the technology spread. They were shocked, though, because after a year, only 5 of the 35 companies that were in their control group actually adopted the technology. And so their study then changed from being asking the question of how quickly does this technology spread to why isn't this technology spreading at all? And what they discovered is that it's often the case that the workers there were going out of their way to avoid this new technology because they didn't feel that they would benefit from its inclusion in the company. So basically, when these workers, who are often paid by the ball, would work with the new technology, it would mean that in the short run, they'd get paid a substantial amount less because they're still trying to figure out how to work this new technology. Perhaps if they were paid hourly, they would feel that they share in the gains because they would presumably get a raise if the technology increased the efficiency of the ball production.
So the workers were resistant. How then did the manufacturers or the factory owners help them get over that resistance?
Right. So what they tried doing, it was based on a hypothesis that the workers didn't feel that they would share in the gains that came from this innovation. And so the way they tried to offset that was by offering certain workers a lump sum amount of money that was equivalent to a month's salary. And they would give that to them on the condition that these workers acquainted themselves with the technology and could genuinely see that once they mastered it, it really increased the output. So what they tried doing then was giving out this lump sum to a certain number of firms and not giving it to others. And what they noticed is that offering this lump sum ended up increasing the probability of adoption of the technology from 16% all the way up to 48%.
So these workers got a lump sum to give them some time, I guess. It's like paying for the learning curve. They wouldn't be making as much money using this new methodology. So they're extended a little bit of a favor from their bosses. Does this represent a new way of thinking about factory workers? It's not something you hear a lot, that there's care in the workers adapting a technology.
Right. There definitely is some potential of an idea there. I think the main message is to just be more thoughtful about how they're paid and what that payment scheme would incentivize them to do. So in this case, it definitely makes a lot of sense to introduce a lump sum payment like that. It's not necessarily true that every industry would benefit from this, but there's definitely the case to be made that this sort of lump sum payment would end up offsetting a lot of the negative things that come with technology not being adopted by these companies.
So with so many people catching World Cup fever, at least for a while, we'll be buying a lot of soccer balls. What are the chances that those soccer balls were created in Sialkot, Pakistan, and that we have some role in how these workers are treated, paid, and look at their jobs?
Well, I suppose you could definitely extend this to the consumer and just say that all consumers should be very aware of where their soccer balls come from, but also all the products they consume come from. The better the workers end up being treated, it looks like, the better the product, the better the efficiency, and everybody wins a little bit more.
Joe Pinsker, assistant editor at The Atlantic, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you.
Joe Pinsker is assistant editor at The Atlantic, where he wrote about the city of Sialkot, Pakistan. That's where almost half of the world's soccer balls are manufactured. And you can find a link to read the article at wordofmouthradio.org.